a number of private photos of over 100 celebrities, including actress Jennifer Lawrence, were hacked and released onto the internet this weekend. How exactly the images were grabbed is still under investigation by the FBI and Apple, but it appears that a group of hackers collected the images in a months-long effort, getting them from Apple's cloud storage service.
The story has raised questions about how secure any of us are online, especially in the era of the cloud, when our personal documents, information, and photographs aren't stored on the machine we're working on, but out there somewhere.
Fred Cate joins us now. He's Distinguished Professor of Law and Senior Fellow at the Center for Applied Cybersecurity Research at Indiana University. Fred, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Before we get deeply into the cloud, are we getting an idea of exactly how these photos were obtained?
Well, I think what you described is exactly what we know at this point. Apple says it was not a direct attack on their system, rather it was people coming in by impersonating the legitimate account owners, so, you know, what we would think of as more traditional account fraud.
Well, stepping back a bit, let's talk about what exactly the cloud is.
Well, you know, the cloud is really sort of a fancy term that doesn't have any clearly defined meaning, but the idea, and it's been around quite some time, is that we store our data remote from us. So unlike having it, you know, in your hands or in the computer on your desk, or even in the server that may be located down the hall, you're storing your data out someplace where you don't know, and that's where the phrase the cloud came from. And typically big companies, Amazon, Facebook, Apple, certainly, you know, they have big data centers around the world, and they back up the data in these different data centers, and then when you need it, no matter what device you're using, you can access the data. And so that's the other sort of cloud feature, that it's kind of ever-present. It's the big thing right now in technology, and you know, even software providers like, say, Microsoft are trying to get you to use cloud-based services. So rather than owning your copy of Microsoft Office, you would actually access it remotely from the cloud, and then you would get the products you need at any given time, whether you're on an iPad or a desktop or a laptop.
Is it likely that a lot of us are using the cloud and not really knowing that we're using it?
We are all using the cloud, every one of us, probably without exception. So if you have any sort of smartphone, you're using the cloud. If you are using any social media, you're using the cloud. And frankly, even things like banking records, airline records, Amazon, eBay, these are all cloud-based services.
Now, Apple has said that this isn't a sign that their entire cloud storage was hacked. It seems to have been isolated to these celebrity accounts. But given that, and that with enough tenacity, it was hackable, how concerned should we be?
Well, we should be concerned. I mean, I don't want to encourage panic here. Most of us are protected to a certain extent by anonymity. There are just too many of us, and nobody really cares about who we are. But this attack appears, and I use the word appear because we still don't have a report from the FBI who's investigating, but to have really involved two separate approaches. And one was the fact that sometimes passwords or the answers to challenge questions aren't very strong. And particularly if you use a password that's related to you, a child's name, a pet's name, a birth date, it's pretty easy for other people to figure that out. The other thing is, it again appears that this attack involved a technology that lets a computer try multiple passwords against an interface. And Apple hadn't set a limit on that. Now, as of Friday, it has set a limit. So now you don't get an infinite number of tries before you get locked out. But at that point, it was still allowing an infinite number of attempts to get into your cloud backup service.
Are there things that you would suggest individuals and businesses, for that matter, do their best to keep off of cloud-based servers?
Well, I think it's really important to remember that cloud-based service is a broad term to describe a lot of things. It's just like we say, I go to the doctor, but there's a big difference between the nurse practitioner or the specialist, you know, cancer specialist or heart specialist. So most businesses, particularly large businesses using the cloud, are using commercial cloud services. They have contracts. They have very strong security. And, given that most hospital records and bank records are already in the cloud, it seems a little silly. It's a little too late to start talking about keeping things out of the cloud. On the other hand, for individuals, I'm not sure I would have stored a nude picture of myself anywhere where it could be accessed by somebody else, whether that's a cloud or whether that's a server of my employer or any other place. at a certain point, you know, the advice we often give, for example, students at the university is, if you make it accessible via the web, you've got to assume somebody's going to access it. And therefore, if it's going to be interesting, if it's going to be tantalizing, if it's going to be highly valuable, they're going to have an incentive to try to access it.
But what is the incentive in this case? I mean, as far as I can tell, the people who did this didn't profit from it. They posted it on Reddit and somewhere else seemingly for free. Why? I mean, what is the point if it's not really got a monetary exchange?
It's a great question, but this isn't really a commercial market. There's much more involved in hacking about bragging rights, about being the first to do it, about getting something nobody else could get. And let's face it, a huge amount of traffic online involves sexually explicit expression. So when you talk about getting access to nude pictures of a famous celebrity, that's going to have a lot of bragging rights and a lot of interest attached to it. And that's got its own value, even if it's not measured in dollars.
There's been some of what people have called victim blaming here, people making the case the mistake was on the part of celebrities for taking these compromising photos, having them somewhere in their technological landscape. Is it fair to blame them in part for not being more careful?
Well, I would be very careful here about using the word blame. In other words, there was a criminal who broke in, and that's fundamentally who's to blame. And then there are questions about who else bears responsibility. Apple made it too easy to break in. They certainly have some responsibility. If individuals picked weak passwords, they have some responsibility. I personally think taking a nude photo of yourself and making it accessible via the cloud is the smartest thing to do. I wouldn't blame someone for doing that. But on the other hand, I would say common sense might have suggested that wasn't a great idea.
So if you are someone who's watching all of this happen, what is the next step? I mean, can we assume that people who house cloud storage will beef up their security and the rest of us will all be better off, that there will be new laws in place because of this? What's the outcome?
Well, I don't know. That's a great question, and I think a lot of people are waiting to see what the answer is. No question about what security is going to be beefed up, and again, we've already seen Apple make a very important change. It is, I think, significant to note that right now there really aren't any legal requirements around this. So Apple provides security because it's in its business interest to do so, but it's not required by law to provide security. And so maybe we see some laws in place either from Congress or from state legislatures saying, look, if you provide services to the public, you've got to protect them in the same way that the auto industry has to protect the public or, we expect other, doctors and banks to protect the public. One reason why law might be useful here is one problem that right now online service providers have is when they do insist on good security, the public hates it. You know, we don't like being told, pick up stronger password, change it every month. You've used a new computer, you have to re-verify yourself. We get really unpleasant about that, and a lot of complaints that companies get are about good security. If Congress required good security, then everyone would be doing it, and there would be less, if you will, competitive reason to offer bad security.
Did we, and I'm using the word we very broadly here, rush into the world of the cloud headlong without thinking about the consequences?
Oh, no question about it. And of course, we did it largely because it saves money. You have to remember that the sort of evolution of digital technologies, computers and networks and smartphones and so forth, over the past 30 years has been not just about improved power and service, but it's also been about trying to cut costs. And so, two decades ago, we had separate banking networks. We had separate networks for controlling important industrial systems like nuclear power plants and the like. Now, to save money, we've put that all on the Internet. We've made it all Internet accessible. If it's accessible to you and me, it's accessible to bad guys no matter where they're located. We've rolled out services without, thinking about or in any way internalizing the real cost of those services when security is compromised. And individuals, frankly, are often protected. You know, like when a credit card is stolen, the huge hack that, for example, Target endured, individuals are largely protected because Congress has already insured our credit cards. We don't pay for fraudulent charges. But, of course, we do pay for them through higher prices. We pay for them in other ways. And I think more and what we're going to see is the price that we're already paying is going to become more visible. And in this case, for these actresses, it's become very visible.
Do you think that part of it could be that there wasn't that much education about what the cloud was? I mean, it seemed like a nifty techie term that was billed as good news to everybody. But I don't know how deep the average consumer understood exactly what the cloud was and what the possible vulnerabilities there were. I mean, maybe it was up to the techie gatekeepers to do more education and ask some big questions before, you know, putting it all out there.
Well, I certainly agree with you that there wasn't a lot of education that most people don't understand. I'm not sure that it actually matters because, you know, what happens is we dangle a new service in front of people. We say, look, every picture you take on your iPhone can now be accessible from every other device you own. Won't that be terrific? And people say, yeah, I love that. And then in the fine print, we say, and by the way, it means if it's accessible to you, it might be accessible to others. And what we know from a lot of research and a lot of experience is people just ignore those warnings. They don't internalize that risk. They just assume it will happen to somebody else, not them. And as a result, as long as the candy is offered, we're going to go for it, no matter what the potential risk associated with it is.
We're talking about our online security in the era of the cloud and the aftermath of a massive release by hackers of private, often nude images of over 100 celebrities.
And you can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. How secure do you feel online? Do you avoid storing certain kinds of things online on your computer, maybe your phone or your tablet? Have you been the victim of some form of hacking or data theft? Or maybe you're in the cybersecurity business and you've got some insight? Let us know what you think. 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation now with cybersecurity expert Fred Kate. We're talking about internet privacy and security in the era of the cloud after this week's release of hacked nude photos of over 100 celebrities.
And you can join in. Do you fear for your data? Do you use the cloud to store documents and photos? Or are you, like a lot of us, unclear on where the stuff we save goes? Who might have access to it? Call in with your questions and your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post over at the Central Time Facebook page. Fred, what is a consumer to do seeing all this? Are there things we can do, not waiting for the internet providers or the government to take steps? What can we do to make ourselves a little more secure?
Well, there are things we can do. And so the first is don't panic. Most people do not suffer from having their data taken or exposed. Most people it doesn't even happen to. Second of all is do those things you can. And unfortunately, they're the things we keep saying to do that no one likes to do. Strong passwords. Don't use the same password across accounts. Change them with some regularity and don't share them with anyone. Because if anyone has your password, they are you. There's no difference online. And if that means, as people often say, well, I have to write it down, write it down. Much better to have a list of passwords that someone has to be physically present to steal than to use a bad password that they can steal from a foreign country or they can steal from some remote location. And then, you know, the same common sense that we use day to day in our everyday lives about, you know, where you walk, is it safe to walk down this street, is this a safe, restaurant or store to use a credit card in, use the same common sense online, too. So, you know, if you're visiting a recognized site, if you're at Amazon.com, I think you can use a credit card with great comfort. If you're someplace you've never been or if someone's approached you, if you've gotten an incoming email asking for your information, be suspicious. Think twice before providing it, just like you would in any other setting.
We're going to go to our phones now and take a call from Rob in Sussex. Hi, Rob.
Hi, how you doing?
Pretty good. What do you think?
I think that the cloud's never going to be 100% secure. And if you don't want anybody to see it, I wouldn't put it up there. Or at least if you do, put it in like a WinRAR file that you encrypt with a password or something like that and then upload that onto there. Because hackers and security companies, they just go back and forth on who can get in what. You know, hackers figure it out, then security boosts up, and then hackers figure out that. I think that's going to be the way it always is.
All right. Thanks, Rob. Rob taking the let the buyer beware sort of mentality there that you should probably never feel too secure about anything you post online. Is that a good place to begin?
Well, I think it's a really important reminder, and that is at the end of the day, nothing's going to be entirely secure online. Nothing may be entirely secure anywhere else. I mean, remember, when you have things in your home, we have locks on our doors and locks on our windows and alarm systems, and maybe you have a dog and you leave the lights on, and but still, if somebody knows you've got something valuable there, they may break in and steal it. And That is certainly true online as well. He does make a very important point, and that is for things like documents and emails and things you may be storing, you can use encryption. There are easy consumer products now that will say, look, if somebody else finds these, they're just going to be gibberish. They're not going to be able to see them. Also, Apple makes available, again, for free and as part of its regular service through iTunes, you can require more than just a password to access your cloud. And therefore, that gives you a greater form of authentication. It's both more burdensome for you, but it's also more burdensome for anyone trying to break into your account.
Thanks a lot for the call, Rob. We'll go now to Stephen in Milwaukee. Stephen, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This is very timely. Yesterday, my bank called me, says, are you trying to make this transaction? And I'm like, no. Well, this is the second time that this happened to me. The last time it was in July, that my debit card information has been compromised, and I have no idea how anybody could be getting my information.
Stephen, thanks a lot for the call. A lot of ways, I guess, that information can get out there, including that big Target breach came out a while ago and the new breach apparently at Home Depot. I don't even know all the details on that. Is that where they might have gotten Stephen's data, or are there other ways too, Fred?
Lots of ways, unfortunately. And I mean, the good news here is the bank caught it, and the bank almost always catches it. As far as we know, about 6 out of 8 times the bank catches fraudulent efforts to use a credit card or use a debit card. But any place you use your debit or credit card could be collecting that information and using it fraudulently. I mean, think about how many times, like in a restaurant, you hand your credit card to someone who disappears with it. That's a very common way of they use what's called the skimmer, and they make an electronic copy of your card. Or sometimes it'll be a business or an employee at a business that will be running a little scam on their own where they're copying down information off these cards. It happens a lot in foreign countries or, you know, places you've never been before. So that's why you'll find banks are a lot more vigilant about charges that come from unusual places.
Now, we've been talking a lot about, you know, things we can do on the consumer end, on our end. I mean, it might be a hassle and a drag, but there are things we can do. But what about the burden that maybe should be on the companies to protect us, to keep us safe? For instance, you know, it sort of seems, I guess, a little surprising that Apple let you try an infinite number of times to hack into a cell phone account in their cloud. What do you think companies should be doing?
Yeah, it's astonishing. And, you know, at this point, I think it's clear companies need a little bit of what you might think of as a legal nudge to try to raise the standard across the board. Some companies are doing better than others, and of course, if you're in a business like banking or healthcare, you have legal requirements that you have to provide a certain level of security, and so, you know, we see a higher security in those environments. I do think that we should remember, just as the first caller noted, this is sort of an arms race, and so as we get better protection and hackers get more sophisticated and then we get better protection, it's going to be a process. It's not got a clear end in sight. And that's unfortunate, and that's kind of scary, but that's unfortunately right now just the way it is.
Fred, I wanted to ask you about the law enforcement angle here. You mentioned the analogy of someone breaking into a house. At least there, law enforcement has a solid geographic starting point, the house. If someone breaks into your storage on the cloud, they could be anywhere on the planet. How hard is it to enforce laws on this?
It's pretty difficult. It is an area in which law enforcement's improved dramatically over the past decade. So, you know, 10 years ago, if you had gone to the police and said, my storage has been hacked, they wouldn't even know what you were talking about. And today, most large police departments, and certainly the FBI and the Secret Service, have very sophisticated cyber crimes units. One of the great things about digital technology is, even though it's easy to access, you almost always leave a trail. And so in some ways, it's an easier place to be able to track down or at least, you know, get some idea where the attack came from. But you mentioned a lot of these attacks do come from overseas, and that's when you just run into a jurisdictional problem. There are a lot of countries we don't have close cooperative relationships with, and if that's where the attack originates from, it's going to be pretty hard to do much about it.
Let's go back to our phones now. We've got another call. Let's see, this from another Rob, I should say, this one in Solon Springs. Hi there, Rob.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. What do you think?
My comment was simply about celebrities being high profile. It's hard to feel sorry for them in this day and age, and we live in the day and age of social media, and everything that you put out there, once it's out there, it's really out there. And I think, the celebrities, they're a target. People want to know what they're doing. So that was the first comment on that. The second thing was just trying to educate young people as far as pictures that they're taking, things that they say, to let them know once it's out there, once it's on the internet, you know, you can't protect it. There's no taking it back. So as the father of a 10-year-old, trying to educate him as far as the social media goes, Facebook, what he's doing, what he's saying, what he's posting, I think we just need to do a real good job of communicating that to our young people so that they can protect themselves.
Right, and that's a great point. Thank you, Rob. And does it start, do you think, Fred, with education at home, with kids, with this generation that's growing up with sort of, you know, life lived forever online? Is there a way to make that hit home?
Yeah. And interestingly, I mean, of course, you know, kids are using these technologies incredibly early, and often they are more advanced than their parents. And so, you know, one thing you see is a lot of efforts to educate children, educate them in kindergarten or educate them in the, you know, grade school. Also, those important behavioral lessons, exactly like Rob was mentioning. I mean, even, you know, in the law school where I teach, we're constantly telling students, you know, if you put it out there, it's going to be out there forever. You know, delete does not really work in the cloud or online. There are a lot of educational efforts that companies, that universities, that others do that try to break this down into really simple terms. So, like, you know, if you own an iPhone, how do you set security on it? And you can go to securitymatters.iu.edu, and you can see the short 3-minute videos we do there. But there are many other examples of those as well.
Fred, thanks a lot for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
That was Fred Cate. He's Distinguished Professor of Law and Senior Fellow at the Center for Applied Cybersecurity Research at Indiana University. We've been talking about this week's release of hacked celebrity photos and what it means for all of our privacy and security online.